Hey, when was the last time you said, "Oh my God"?
You are listening to So What, a podcast from Canadian Mennonite University. Welcome to the show. CMU is in Treaty 1 territory, Winnipeg, Manitoba. I'm your host, Jonas Cornelson. As usual, I'm in Treaty 7 territory, and this time the whole episode was recorded live here in Calgary, Alberta. I had the chance to catch up with CMU Associate Professor of Communications and Media, David Balzer, whose voice you heard off the top. We got together to discuss David's new audio documentary entitled, Oh My God. You're going to hear a lot more about this. We've got clips from the doc and even a couple stories you won't hear anywhere else. Thanks to David for meeting up with me on his way through town. Now here is our conversation. David, for longer than I've known you, you've been working on an audio documentary called Oh My God, exploring when and why people use that phrase. The doc was finally published earlier this year, and we're here to celebrate that the only way audio people know how, by making a podcast about the doc. You have been asking the questions on this file for a long time. Are you feeling ready to answer some?
Absolutely, yes.
Good.
I've had many years of thinking about this phrase.
This is exciting. Well, I want to start with a question I've heard you ask many times, but I've never heard you answer. When was the last time you said, "Oh my God"?
That is a fascinating question. I think the quick answer to that is that I rarely, if ever, use it. Because and there's a long part of the doc explains kind of why that would be.
Right.
But I have started using it.
Oh, interesting.
Which is a really fascinating experience. The end of the doc will explain why I use it.
Yes.
Why? So because there was I don't think I'm giving away too much by saying that there was a kind of a personal transformation. Truly, in my personal experience with the phrase. So now while I wouldn't have been all that comfortable for many years saying, oh my God, it wasn't a natural expression, but now I have on occasion found that space.
Okay.
So,
and we'll get to that very moment in this whole endeavor. So that's exciting, a little foreshadowing. Well, I have a clip here where you recount the first time that you asked someone that same question back in 2006.
The first time I asked someone that question was at a campus pub at the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg, Canada. We were brainstorming ideas for a live radio event on campus. I spun around to a table of students sitting behind us and said, "Do you mind if I ask a question? When was the last time you said, oh my God?"
Okay, so take me back to the pub. Like, had you been thinking about that question for a long time, or did it just come to you? Like,
we had agreed to have lunch. Yeah. We were planning this campus event. And during the week before, I was brainstorming what could shape this event. So I came into the lunch meeting with the idea of exploring the oh my God phrase. Mm-hmm. But turning and asking the question literally was in that moment.
Okay.
And the reason was because when I pitched the idea, the two guys I was meeting with said, I don't think that's going to work.
That's not going anywhere.
So I said, kind of like, I didn't say this, but it was kind of like a watch me moment. I'm like, well, let's find out. And I literally said, let's find out. And I turned around and I just started talking to this group behind us.
Well, let's listen to what you got back from that moment.
The last time I said, oh my God, was when I looked in the mirror this morning.
But wait a minute, because you know the phrase could go lots of ways. When you said, oh my God, was that a good thing or was that a bad thing?
No. When I look in the mirror and I say, oh my God, that is a good thing.
Okay, so you're sitting there, you turn around and you get that. Like, what are you thinking in that moment?
I literally was thinking, this is awesome and this is going to work.
So you had a sense. You were like really onto something.
The engagement of the question, I turned around to the two guys and I'm like, let's go for it.
Yeah.
let's try this. And no, this is crazy.
Not much introductory wise. You're just like, hey, when did you say this?
I literally just heard him, and it was like eight students, and there was a conversation happening at one end of the table, and I was talking with this guy who was sitting at the end, and then his two friends beside him who were women. And when he said that, they just lost it. And then we kept going with our meeting, and I could hear them unpacking. Okay. Why did you say that? How did you say it? They just kept going on the conversation after I asked the question.
Yeah. One of the things that fascinated me the most about the whole question of saying, oh my God, is when you get these contrasting perspective on what it means to say it or whether you should say it at all. So here's a really short clip that kind of illustrates that tension.
No, I never use that.
No?
No.
Why not?
I don't swear.
That's not a swear.
You don't think it's a swear?
No, I don't think so. It's a common expression, I guess, you know. Oh, my God. So
that was by your collaborator, Melissa McEachran. So you have these two guys, one saying it's a swear, and the other saying it's a common expression. Can it be both?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. For those of you listening in Manitoba and Winnipeg, Kildonan Place Mall Food Court was where that interview happened. Absolutely. I think it can be both.
And is it always both? Like, even, you know, it's other words we would call swears are also relatively common. Like, does commonness and swear, like, how do those exist together?
There's a theory about a neuroscientific theory of swearing that anchored some of my thinking around what is swearing, where I was trying to respond to exactly that question. So it brings together culture, sociology, psychology, and theology or belief. Yeah. So I would say that when people skew towards, when the religious sentiment of something which has a sacredness to it, kind of presents itself more, then we find, like, in lots of research done in Quebec, where lots of swear words are church related. Right. So there you see the religious sentiment creating the offense. Yeah. So then it's swearing.
Right.
If you lean more towards the culture and sociology of common usage, then people would say, no, that's not a swear.
Sure.
I don't know if every swear word can go both ways.
Right. I guess swearing maybe is in the eye of the swearer or perhaps the hearer, you know, if it causes offense or if it causes that even sense of transgressiveness inside oneself.
Absolutely.
Then that's what makes it swearing.
And that was exactly what I was super curious about, because when I was on the street, I'd ask somebody the question, they would say, oh, I use it or I don't. Right. And then I'd kind of go, oh, really? That's interesting. And then they would start unpacking why, I was literally just expressing curiosity. And then what they would end up doing is unpacking exactly those dynamics of what was in the eye or in the ear of the user.
So, keeping on this theme of swearing and what is swearing, let's hear a clip with the swearing historian, Dr. Melissa Moore, on where these swear words come from.
Well, I think that swear words pretty directly reflect what a society's biggest taboos are. And I think in English, in the Middle Ages, sort of up to the Renaissance, the biggest areas of taboo and regulation and, you know, sacredness, that those were all religious.
And are taboos now?
And now it's kind of our biggest taboos are sort of centering around race and summing up someone in a word, particularly racial slurs. And so those are now the sort of worst words in the English language.
So that line was really interesting to me because it made me notice where my taboos still are. Like, I think as kids, whether it's from our parents or peers, et cetera, we learn that there are bad words. And when we hear people say them, we might assume that those people have bad intentions. And I would say I've unlearned that impulse, except in the case of words like Dr. Moore mentioned, you know, words meant to hurt people based on race, gender, or some other personal attribute. Those ones still cross a line for me, too. So to bring it back to, oh my God, I think the phrase really sits somewhere in the middle. It's polite enough now that few people would dismiss you outright for saying it, but it seems to have enough of that taboo still attached to it that it really gets people thinking.
I think that balance and that breadth across taboo and not taboo absolutely gave it a lot of playing room. It also made it possible to have a street conversation without people really feeling like me going on the street and saying, hey, WTF, let's talk about it, right? like when you're approaching someone on the street and you're trying to get a two to five minute conversation and you're literally on the street, you've got maybe 5 to 10, maybe 5-6 seconds to engage them. And if you're not coming in with something that's accessible, so some of those other words are supercharged still, right? Whereas this one, I would say it's I've sometimes said that it's owned by the culture as more, far less offensive than offensive for quite a few people in our current milieu. So because of that, they found when I would approach them, like I would say, hey, I'm doing an audio doc about when people say, oh my God, that was my opening 2 seconds. Most of the time, people just started laughing.
Okay.
Or they were like, what? Like, that's seriously?
It's so
like
benign.
Like, you're doing a project
really?
That?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, yeah, when was the last time you said it? And then they would tell me a story, and it would be like this fascinating conversation. And then their next comment often, or depending on who they were, would be, but I don't say it around. Like one person's like, well, but I'd never say it around my cousin. It's like, well, why not? And they're like, well, because he's studying to become a priest.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really? And I said, so why? And then you have this incredible conversation. Because they're unpacking both what they think about the priesthood or about, I mean, you name it, right? Yeah.
So did anyone on the street ever just like not engage with you? Like you crossed a line to them just by bringing it up?
I mean, they would be very quick to say, oh, I never use that phrase. So they immediately create a boundary about the usage, but not me asking.
Oh, that's interesting. The doc, we got into this a bit as well. It has several examples of how the phrase, oh my God, isn't necessarily just one phrase. It's not about what you say, but how you say it. Probably my favorite one of those is from Allie Mullen, whom you interviewed at her family ranch in Cartwright, Manitoba. Yeah. And you were discussing an event 10 years previous where she sang a musical theater song in a local talent competition that used, oh my God, quite a lot, like in the dozens of times, which didn't sit well with everyone in small town Manitoba. But here is how she told you she viewed the use of that phrase in that particular song.
To me, that would be an example of where the phrase, oh my God, is used as just a casual part of their conversation. It's just something that they say, and it doesn't necessarily mean, oh my God. It just means, oh my God, you guys, oh my God. And so that's kind of the style in which I sang the song.
So this is brilliant to me because, like, well, it doesn't mean, oh my God, it just means, oh my God. Like, you know, you like that sentence doesn't make any sense if it's written down, but you hear how she says it, and there's a difference, at least for people who can pick up on nonverbal cues. There is that sense that it is not only what you say, but how you say it. And you fleshed this out later in the doc with Dr. Gordon Maddies, your CMU colleague, in chatting about the way, oh my God, is used in the Book of Psalms as a personal plea for God's help or presence. You put more precise language on this distinction we just heard naturally with Ali. So here's one more clip featuring Gordon in both the public lecture and then a one-on-one interview with you.
Gordon says there's actually a way to indicate the difference between oh my God as a personal plea and the more casual oh my God as an exclamation. Comes down to how you write the word oh, whether you add or subtract the letter H.
Today, O is used before vocatives.
Vocatives. That's the personal plea. No H for vocatives.
And OH for exclamations. So put that into your research.
I am right now. We're taping it.
Gordon says this written distinction offers us a choice.
It's fun to think about it this way, that every time you say, oh my God, you have to decide, am I saying O-H or am I saying O? I don't think people will do that. So that's why I think, never mind, just let people say it and hope that at some point in their life, they will actually be addressing the God.
So Gordon's probably right. Like, you might not have gotten very far if you'd asked people, how do you spell, oh my God? But did you find a lot of people sort of reflected on that distinction, maybe without knowing it, like as sort of an invocation versus just sort of an exclamation?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that was, so here's the fascinating thing about research is it's research. You learn things you didn't know.
Right.
With a genuinely open question. This was the marvel of this person, for me personally, of this experience, because Gordon made that distinction about the vocatives at a face-to-face, a live forum event at CMU in 2013. Okay. He had gone and done the research. I literally was asking him, help me understand this. We did this live event, and he made that comment in 2013. His explanation of asking people, you know, are you using O or OH, yeah, that was a personal interview 5 years later. So my research trajectory is I discovered in the Hebrew this vocative. So once Gordon had given me that insight, I started hearing it differently on the street. And I'm like, wait a minute, that person was using the vocative.
Okay, yeah.
This person wasn't. There's the H or there's the OH. Okay. But I wouldn't have been able to hear that without going into the research and learning it. And Gordon even was discovering some of that, because he dove in as only Gordon can do.
Yes.
And unpacked it in this
You asked a biblical scholar to discuss one word, and
like when my editor heard that some of these clips from Gordon, her first reaction the first time she heard the clip, because we're doing these live reads, she's like, that guy is awesome. Like, she's like, you have to keep him in this thing.
For sure. So at the end of that clip, Gordon talks about not being bothered by the casual use of the phrase, but seemingly hoping it left some sort of door open for people to experience God's presence. And that made me wonder if in your street corner conversations, did anyone kind of stop and just wonder why they said that phrase? And that, well, like the person with the cousin priest, you know, like, did they suddenly just like go, oh, does this have a deeper meaning?
Okay, so we're in downtown Toronto early on, where it's in November. I'm there with a videographer friend of mine, and we're shooting interviews at City Hall. There's a huge open free skating area.
Okay.
So we're literally working the perimeter of this skating rink as people are getting their skates on and asking them this question. So we approach this middle-aged woman who is sitting there getting her skates on, or like, when do you say, oh my God? And she said, well, I say, oh my God, when I see the crystals of the snowflake and when I see it land on. So she talked about saying, oh my God, when these, yeah, you know, the beauty. And then she went skating. Yeah. She kept coming back for half an hour, literally, because we were still there. And she kept coming back and said, oh, and here's one more thing I was thinking about. And then that person over there, they just said, oh my God, you should go interview them.
Did this particular person in Toronto, did she ever let on like whether she was religious at all or had beliefs around the phrase or the God?
Not that I can recall.
Okay.
She never, but she immediately connected it to awe. Another woman we stopped, we said, you know, when was the last time? She was walking through the park there. And she said, I just said, oh my God, at that street corner over there. And she pointed across the street. And so we're looking, and it was a Starbucks. And she said, and so then we're kind of looking, and she was turned and looked, and she said, do you see those kids under blankets sleeping on the street corner? She said, I just said, oh my God, there. She said, I'm a flight attendant from Amsterdam. I'm on a 24-hour layover in Toronto, and I'm just walking through the city here. She said, we never see that in the Netherlands. And so when I saw that here, I said, oh my God. So it was just like, I was completely blown away, right? So there was just this So when she said that, it's like, it didn't sound anything like swearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just didn't.
Sure.
It was of a completely different nature. So yeah, there was a lot of remarkable. Another guy at that skating scene, as we're talking about the City Hall, his first reaction was, I said, oh my God, last night when the Toronto Maple Leafs lost again.
No, I asked about the religion thing, because elsewhere in the doc, you point out that his belief in God decreased statistically in society. Yeah. Saying God's name in everyday conversation just exploded. So why do you think people who don't believe in God would even bother saying, oh my God?
Well, I think it's in part connected to what Melissa Moore was saying. This is my working hypothesis, because the offensiveness. So people may have been using "Oh my God" in that taboo realm as a very provocative thing to say, as a kind of swearing. So even as people come off of that taboo, as the taboo releases, it's still a part of their vernacular, possibly. So Dr. Sally Tagliamati, who's the sociolinguist, she would say that the "oh my God" phrase emerges as a intensifier, which is not religiously connotated. And so if you push her and say, well, where do intensifiers come from? She's like, welcome to the incredible mystery of how language emerges into our vernacular. Why do we choose this intensifier rather than another? Because it has a kind of long history, it still does work in the culture and in the social context that it's being used, even just as an intensifier. So it's people would use it because it's exclamatory. And, you know, so Gordon is saying part of his journey has been that, and I would say a lot of people that I interviewed who continue to have religious commitments, they genuinely find it offensive when they hear somebody else say it. Sure. So that's what Gordon was referring to say, do I need to be the one doing the work of managing their language use? So Gordon was reflecting on his own journey a little bit to saying, hey, that's okay. Maybe I don't need to, I can still carry the value and the worth of the phrase for me without superimposing my conviction and say everyone else who doesn't believe like me should all talk like me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's actually a perfect bridge to your moment of transformation, maybe your oh my God moment, if you will. So I'm going to spoil the ending for anyone listening to this who hasn't heard the original doc yet. You end the doc with a story about sitting in a white steepled church pew in Champaign, Illinois, 18 years into this project, listening to a guest minister describe how God is always around, whether we notice or not. And I'll let you say what happens.
In that moment, something clicked for me. Most of the "oh my gods" people say are spoken unawares. But that morning in that little church, it struck me. Here's what I'm going to do with everyone's "oh my gods." All the invisible ones that they don't hear, but I do. I'll let them be for me a concrete and explicit reminder of the sustaining presence of God in my life. So now, whenever I hear the phrase, and I do hear every single one, I'm going to ask myself, does it make sense for God to be here right now? Check. Yes, it does. And I'll smile because I'm happy about that. If I thought 18 years was a long time, this little project might just be for the rest of my life.
It's a great music bed there. I might just keep it in. but I have to tell you, David, the first time I listened to this and I heard you say that you hear every single "oh my God," I reflexively thought, "oh my God." Like, that's intense. I was on the bus. I didn't say it out loud, so I don't know if it counts.
Oh, if you think it counts.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay. But you couldn't hear me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I guess one question is, how's that going for you?
Well, and I think it's hard for people to wrap their head around it, but when you've spent that much time researching something, I've tuned my ear to it. It's ridiculous. It's very funny in a sense, because like the one that I can remember is I like going to Costco. I was at Costco and somebody was looking at the poppy seed muffins just saying, "Oh my God, oh my God, you have to take a picture of that and send it." Right? I just walking by, I have no idea what the context is, but obviously there's a story there for these
price,
two people.
The quality of the muffins.
They needed to take a picture and send it to some friend, right? So I did exactly what the doc said at that point. I'm like, is it make sense for God to be at Costco today?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, it is. And would God be laughing right now? This person is finding great humor in they're going to send this thing and it's going to be so funny. And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay with that.
Right. So you talked about whether it's kind of religious people's job to manage other people's language use. And like, did you like maybe used to wish people would say, "Oh my God," like more thoughtfully or not say it at all?
Well, I absolutely would say that I grew up in the environment I was in where language about God is sacred and God is to be honored. Yeah. And so how do we express our reverence? So in that sense, then it was like, well, you don't just talk flippantly about God.
Yeah.
So this was a huge shift, not in terms of my sense of reverence or sacredness, that God is less sacred. And so then, hey, I'm fine with that. But it's who has to manage it. And that is huge. So now when I hear it, because I've interviewed a lot of people, obviously not everyone made it into the doc. And I actually walked away over time saddened that the emotion they feel when they hear the phrase in the public is anger or disgust. And for me, all those possibly where that could have been my experience, I now ask a much, I think, more profound and relevant question. It's actually literally made me, I would say, more aware of God's goodness and presence and also God's pain. Because so many people say the phrase, it's an intensifier.
Right. Well, oh my God, the beauty of the snowflakes. Oh my God, the kids sleeping on the street.
Exactly. But, yeah. Exactly. So I have more highs and lows of emotion, but all of that more of within the God's presence, a sense of God's presence doesn't give me a quick answer to all of those highs and lows, but it does feed into the fact that I want to live my life connected to who God is. And so now the culture is giving me ample opportunity.
I believe it. Yeah.
Yeah, because I can't unhear it.
Well, I was going to ask if you like go looking for it, but you probably don't have to.
I don't look for it at all. It absolutely comes to me.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Well, in terms of the project, like you started a long time ago, and to the extent that this part of it is done, sincerely, congratulations.
Yeah, thank
you. It's a big accomplishment and a really good documentary. I'm going to highly recommend listeners of this podcast go and check it out. We'll drop a link to it in the show notes and everything. And thanks so much for making time for this, David, and really hope you enjoy the rest of your time here in beautiful southern Alberta.
Well, this has been a sheer delight. I've been looking forward to this for so long, and reconnecting with you in person, Jonas, is just always, it's awesome.
Hey, it's Jonas back in the studio, just with a quick note. Thanks again to David for doing this interview. I had a lot of fun. Thanks to you for listening. If you want to get in touch, you can reach us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/sowhatpodcast. And you can subscribe and listen to past episodes at cmu.ca/sowhatpodcast or anywhere you find these kinds of things. I'll be back in December with alumni reflections from CMU's 25th anniversary event this fall. Talk to you then. Take care.